This podcast is brought to you by Men's Tee Clinic. Men's Tee Clinic is the team I trust with my total wellness optimization, and so should you. Five DFW locations with North Frisco, El Dorado Parkway at Dallas North Tollway now open. Call 972-GO-MEN'S-TEE or visit mensteeclinic.com.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
All righty, yes, sir. Let's do it. It's hour number 4 of the G-Pack Nation on 105 through the Fan. What a massive day of sports. Doug Peterson, Eagles head coach, fired. Looked last week like he was cleaning out his staff and getting ready to impress the GM and owner with a new set of assistants. But no, he is gone, too. So we'll have the latest on that throughout the remaining 2 hours of our broadcast. Porzingis was set to return. But then the game was canceled. So you had a couple of big Mavs breaking stories here in the AM hours on 105 through the Fan through Sean and RJ and the KMC Masterpiece. And, yeah, too many guys either have COVID or are having to quarantine, you know, having to contact trace and all that. So their game against the Pelicans has been pushed back to a later date. Then, of course, you have the national championship game here tonight. Bama and Ohio State going to go after it once again. Is being in this game, is being in the Final Four too much of a recruiting advantage? Is that what we're finding out? That when you get here, it just makes all the kids think, oh, there's the Final Four schools, I'm going there.
Well, that might be a good point, because Ohio State, Clemson, and Bama pretty much live here, right?
Yeah.
Oklahoma swings through, Notre Dame swings through, but the mainstays, Bama, Ohio State, Clemson. And if that wasn't the top three recruiting class, I bet it's three of the top five or six. So, yeah, I think so.
I think it gives you a huge advantage for financially because of how you can pay your staffs and stuff like that. I mean, when Dabo Swinney started taking Clemson to these playoff games, all of a sudden it was like, whoa, wait, we can pay coaches this? And his staff became one of the highest paid. And then Alabama had to counter. Then all of a sudden Georgia had to jump in. So, yeah, I think that when you play in these playoff games, yes, it makes money for the school, the conference, but it also, like I say, for the school, it helps you be able to have those staffs that you can give them. You can overpay, have a lot of staff, and then that way it helps you out at the end of the day.
I mean, there's all these things that are evolving as far as how we choose our champion this century, really. For the longest time, it was just the polls and the human elements. They would take care of things or make adjustments as they saw fit, and the BCS and now the playoffs. And I don't know, I think one of the takeaways is we're 7 or 8 years into this bad boy is it's a pretty major advantage, both money, which I didn't think of, but you're right there, Brian. I mean, they have to share some of that money with the conference.
They do.
But if it's two SEC teams, then it just makes everybody down there more rich than – and I think it's confirmed every year, and the longer we go, there's this advantage. And I don't know if expanding the playoff field – would benefit that or, you know, just be more fair. But whatever the case, it's another reason I'd love to see it. The game is tonight in 2 hours, Hard Rock Stadium in Miami on ESPN. Do you guys check out the regular ESPN telecast, or are you snooping around for one with the coaches or the fun, or which one do you guys like to do?
I don't know. They're not doing the coaches one this year, are they, Brian? Brian got us a guest that was the
Tom
guy
who used
to facilitate it.
Yeah, yeah. Tom Luganbill came
on. That was cool, but I don't know if they're doing it this year.
I think that ESPN does have several platforms, but I think it has to do with you could get Alabama radio, and then you could get Ohio State radio. There were eight that I couldn't even – there were so many of them I just was trying to pay attention because I was looking for, okay, where's the coaching one? But I think Tom said that they weren't going to do that this year.
Well, it was cool for turning it over. I think more than that, it was cool to see the next day's highlights and the big plays and what the coaches have said. I don't know. Maybe it's too dry to get mass appeal for the coaches, or maybe COVID prevented them from having it. But there are going to be multiple ESPN platforms cranking this baby out.
I was going to say, the coaches one, it's like the exact opposite of the Nickelodeon thing. And I think that's really cool. I don't know if like the NFL and college football could do this in their TV deals, where you give the rights to multiple people. I'm sure it would make your rights worth a lot less individually, but maybe even more total, where it's just for different types of fans. I'd check in on the coaches one because I think it's cool. A lot of times you'll like you get a defensive coach, and as they're lining up, he's like, "Oh yeah, well, boy, when they do this, watch this and this and this," and it's just like, "Oh cool." You get like you can gain some knowledge from it, but to a lot of people, you'd much rather just hear them snap the ball, run the play, and have an announcer.
I would love to. Well, not a love, but I like to watch when they have like Dan Mullen is on with the ESPN crew, and Dan Mullen has played against Alabama. You know, I like to know these coaches that have lined up and, you know, when they bring them on. And there's and some of these coaches are really good. Their personalities are good when it's like, okay, when you play these guys, you got to think about, you know, give me some insight of, okay, it's going to be a tough day, but if they're going to win this, this is how they're going to do it. You know, and I think that's where we could benefit. That coaches thing is cool because they could tell you like, man, they're showing two deep here right now. Get ready. This ball's going there or this or it's yeah. single high. The ball's going to go here. Man, you got to bang your time out here right now. You cannot let Alabama have any momentum. You know, those are the yeah. kinds of insights as the game's rolling on that you need from these coaches and you can learn along the way.
And it's open. You know, it's not like they're worried about the time or there's a play-by-play no. announcer trying to take it back. You know, they have time to really expand on thoughts.
They're surprised, too, when things happen. You know, that some of those coaches are like, man, I can't wait to talk to him about that at the coaches' convention. That's a terrible decision, right? You know, I mean, yeah. they kind of get on each other about, man, I don't think I would have done that, you know. And then that's I always good. Go, well, that's why you're sitting there and they're on the sidelines while, you know, playing the game. So,
all right, next talking point from tonight's national championship game. The last time these two teams met, first round, 2015 Sugar Bowl. Ohio State goes on to win. They beat Oregon in the first ever college football playoff championship. That was Zeke and them. Zeke.
And I believe that was the – I believe they were the four. And I believe that they was were. The only time that we've had a four that had any sort of a chance. Ever since then, it feels like it's a bunch of Oklahoma getting whooped, Notre Dame getting whooped. That was the year that we actually had four teams. So that was fun.
Yeah, and I believe that's the year, too, that it was questioned whether Ohio State was going to get in, mm-hmm. and they smashed Wisconsin – and to this day, Urban Meyer's like, listen, I would have never done that to Wisconsin, but I had to get us in. So yeah,
you have to take advantage of an opportunity like that. It matters.
Yeah,
you know, and hey, you say what needs to be said to your rival so they don't get too jammed up about it. But shoot, yeah, you know, I don't think you can get bent out of shape as a coach if somebody runs up the score to you. It's the game, you know.
Especially
it's the process.
In the conference title game. Like, you're going over to the sideline in the conference championship. You're like, coach. And he's like, yeah, I know, you're going to get us. And it's like, yeah, I just want you to know that I'm not going to stop. Right now, we might be five. So I'm going to try to hang 70 on you. Sorry, coach.
Well, and speaking of how that money works, you know what I'm saying? It's like, okay, well, I get it. You know, go ahead, run it up. About 800 grand's coming our way in this profit sharing or whatever.
We'll take this butt kick and just make sure the check yeah. clears. Thank you very much. Yeah.
Yeah, we'll be punting there in the fourth quarter. You just do your part. Justin Fields, big moment to shine. He's always been in Trevor Lawrence's shadow a bit. Same age, coming up, all that, the camps. He had to always be hearing about Trev. You rock him in the semifinals. Now you have a chance to win the title game and even up the scoreboard there, give you last laugh before you both – head off to college. What's your favorite quarterback rivalry of your lifetime, college or pros? What is the one that's sticking out to you the most? Go ahead. You're going to say something, Brian.
Well, when I was growing up as a kid, Bradshaw and Staubach mm-hmm. were the two that were going at it. You know, and it seemed like every year it was a Super Bowl matchup. I love when in going talking about AFC. You know, Ken Stabler from the Raiders. I was always watching them and the Steelers play, Stabler and Bradshaw. You know, how about, you know, if you look at even the situation San Francisco, you know, with all their great quarterbacks.
Montana versus Young.
Yeah, well, yeah, exactly. But, it's really cool, though, that the great ones that have – and college football has had a lot of them, too, which I think is really, really is special as you go through the history of that one as well.
Was Aikman taking down more Aikman Young? Oh, Aikman Kelly.
How about Aikman Kelly?
Aikman Kelly was that was good. They had to play a lot. They sure did. But yeah,
Montana Danny White.
Montana Danny White was that was kind of one sided a little bit there. Montana kind of got the best of him a little bit. Tom Brady and Peyton Manning was I think that was probably that's probably one of the best ones ever. Yes.
Eli's the one that was snatching Super Bowls from him, though, so that's the one that I like the best. I like Eli versus Tom Brady. because
the Mannings versus Brady. I like that, Jeff. He had more success than Peyton did. Okay, elsewhere here in your national championship game storylines, the Buckeyes have had a handful of guys out with COVID. You're looking at starting defensive lineman Tommy Togiai.
Togiai.
Starting defensive lineman Tyreek Smith. Buckeyes going to be without their two best kickers. Having to snag a freshman, Jake Seibert, he's going to handle the kicking duties. And one of their running backs, Williams, is out with COVID.
Okay.
A lot of rogue eyes in these names I'm noticing on this Ohio State roster.
That's the way they like to do things. Yeah. I want to hit you with the Cowboys update. Ian Rappaport, 8 seconds ago, Cowboys have an agreement for Dan Quinn to be their new defensive coordinator. So it is a done deal, and it's going to be Dan Quinn as your defensive coordinator.
Breaking Cowboys news here for you on your home of the Cowboys, 105.3 The Fan. We saw the reports earlier today that Dan Quinn had become the favorite. I believe it was Todd Archer reporting that. And so we talked about it numerous occasions so far during today's show. And I think even Fish said it back in the 320 segment that that was the odds-on favorite and the expectation at this point that, that Quinn was going to become the defensive coordinator. Do you guys like this hire? Do you think the Cowboys did the right thing bringing in the former Falcons head coach and Seahawks DC? Been to, what, 3 Super Bowls this decade? Won one of them there with Seattle. To one of them as a head coach. So,
do you ask him in the interview about blowing a 28-point lead? Like, is that your defense there, Dan? You the one who gave up a 28-point lead?
That's our favorite coach actually was calling plays that day for Atlanta.
Yeah, Shanahan, right?
Shanahan was calling plays that day for Atlanta. So
you
anytime,
play to win the game.
Yeah.
You know, if you drop passes and the clock stops, whoops, it happens. I like the Dan Quinn hire. I actually do, more than the McCarthy hire when they hired him, because I think no matter who they hired, you were going to have a lot of people who were going to look for a negative because it's the Cowboys, and it would have been either he's never been a coordinator or his defense was bad this year or whatever. But Dan Quinn between Seattle and Atlanta has run with 4 down linemen. He's run with 3 down linemen. But he had a really good run in Seattle as a defensive coordinator. When a head coach thing doesn't work out and you have to go back to what you're best at, I'll take that experience. I will take a guy who is respected league-wide as a defensive mind that has a track record that is good as a coordinator, that has run some really good defenses. I got no problems with Dan Quinn.
Let's look no further than what goes on in the zone division at the football team with Jack Del Rio, former head coach, longtime head coach, and then he gets an opportunity to be the DC, you know, and they do a great job. You know, the football team, I mean, that was their calling card, was their defense all year. I do like this hire because I think it's a better fit for the personnel they currently have, you know, and I think that's really, really important, you know, and to me, the draft is going to be about adding secondary, hopefully a couple of corners, hopefully a safety, you know, maybe a defensive tackle or two. So, yeah, I'm totally on board with this. I'm talking to everybody in Atlanta about Quinn. They swear by the guy. They say the problems they had in Atlanta wasn't him. It was that every year they had a new OC. That was the biggest problems that they were dealing with.
What's Mike McCarthy's connection to Dan Quinn?
I don't know that he has one.
I don't think he does.
Which makes me think that the Joneses were also very involved in this, where it was, you know, there may be guys that you're comfortable with and you like, but we're going to be part of the interview process. And I bet you Jerry, when he talks to 76 million people in the league like he does, is going to hear a lot of good things about Dan Quinn. And so maybe that's a little bit of a compromise.
Well, and two, this, you know, with Joe Witt, who they interviewed first, you know, he was with Mike in Green Bay. Now, maybe it's a situation where he's asked about, you know, Dan is, you know, these coaches, they do know the other coaches in the league, and maybe they're not maybe what their backgrounds are and who they'd been with. He's capable of not only getting some background information, but also, you know, making sure that when he asks the questions, he has exactly in mind what he wants to do. You know, and you put these guys on the board, you have them talk about their scheme. You have them talk about the direction, you know, what they think about and player acquisition. You know, there's a lot of things you could really get into before you hire one of these guys.
So the report was that Mike McCarthy was pushing for the Joe Witt Jr. that you just referenced,
right,
to Does this mean the Cowboys didn't listen, or is Joe Witt going to come on in a different capacity?
I think that if and we've talked about Raheem Morris possibly getting the Atlanta job, I would say it's less than 5%. But if he were to get that job, then you would see Joe Witt stay and be the defensive coordinator. But now it's they're in a situation where he could go and maybe leave. We need to see the contract situation. Atlanta might not allow some of these assistants to walk, so you have to be very mindful of that. There's a name of a guy, a defensive line coach there named Travis Jones, that is an assistant defensive line coach. I had somebody whisper in my ear, keep an eye on Travis Jones, defensive line coach from the Atlanta Falcons, as an assistant, maybe the defensive line coach here for the Cowboys.
So do you think it's the Jones pattern to give you the chance to name most of your coaches when you first get there, but if you screw it up, they're going to jump in here and start pulling their own guys into the mix? Or
it makes sense. At least in my brain, that makes sense. If I'm going to bring in a head coach and the whole world's going to tell me I have to empower my head coach and let him hire his staff, then, yep, that makes sense. And then if I think that he made a gigantic mistake in one of his hirings, then I'm going to put my finger on the next one. So, like, we're going to get into the Jerry Jones and the meddling and this and that, but Mike McCarthy hired Mike Nolan, and that was a train wreck. This was the worst defense in the history of the Cowboys, and the way they handled COVID was a train wreck. So I know that it's going to lead to the Jerry Jones meddling deal, but at the same time, I would too. I'd say I let you do it. Yours was bad.
Well, Dan comes in with a hell of a resume, including he impressed your guy Tommy D down there, the former Falcons GM.
Yeah.
What, did you hear anything about the way that Dan was able to manage the COVID all the way through?
No, I mean, I didn't really ask about that with Tom. I didn't really, everything from Tom was very positive about – I was saying, hey, how does he teach? How does he teach? That's important to me. He goes, listen, the guy gets it. He the players, black players, white players, it doesn't matter. They all go towards him. They like him. They feel like that he's got their back. He was one of those guys that, everybody there really, really respected, and the job he did and how he was able to, present himself to the players and all those things. So, all that was very, very positive. And again, Tommy could have told me, he said, listen, man, the guy was a joke. He got us all fired and all that. I mean, no, from the word go, it's like, hey, no, this guy, if he gets an opportunity with somebody, he's going to do some good work because he is a teacher.
Let me ask you this question as we head off. I tease going into the top of the hour, takeaways or headlines from the national title game. Is Bama a touchdown and a half better than Ohio State? Is 9 a fair point spread?
We'll find out because I took the points. I'm taking the points because I think that Ohio State can score on Bama a lot, and I think that Bama can score on Ohio State a lot. And to me, the wild card is Trevor Lawrence struggled against Ohio State because the big dudes up front beat Clemson in the trenches. And I believe that Ohio State front can do it to Bama too with their center out. So I think this will be Mac Jones's biggest struggle in terms of you don't get to be clean and pretty all day with dudes wide open. You might be challenged a little bit. So I'm taking those points, but it's still Alabama.
Yeah.
So it's very possible they beat them by 20.
The game that you need to study to how to attack Alabama offensively is the Ole Miss game. They had a lot of problems handling Ole Miss's offense that day. Lane Kiffin called a great game. They just didn't have anything defensively to stay with them. If you want to watch how to play them also on defense, though, watch the Georgia game. Georgia's got the defensive line. Georgia's got the secondary. Georgia has the linebackers. That was a lot closer game early in the year, though. And actually, Georgia had a lead in the second half in that game. So that might be one you want to watch to study if you want to know how to play. If you got the personnel to do it, you could match up with them much like Georgia did.
Very good. An exciting game tonight, 7 o'clock. But again, the breaking news, the Cowboys have hired Dan Quinn as their defensive coordinator. We have wild card winners and losers, including the team who dodged a bullet and now appears like a possible Super Bowl team. It's next in the nation. Right on. Welcome back. It is the G-Bag Nation here on 105.3 The Fan. We have winners and losers from wild card weekend here to go over. including a team that might have gone from pretender to major contender. Who's that? We'll talk about that in the other angle. The segment is brought to you by Soda, state-of-the-art weight loss. And it's the Frankels. If you're hurt in an accident and it's not your fault, call the Frankels 214-333-3333 or go online to truckwreck.com. If you'd like to interact with the show, the Autoflex Leasing fan text is open at 877-881-1053. Yeah, a lot of reaction coming into Dan Quinn getting the job as defensive coordinator. And, you know, we'll continue to have angles on that breaking news story here. We got the 817 coming in and saying, geez, they just couldn't interview more than one person for the job. What a disgrace. At least Quinn may know what he's doing. Yeah, you know, I think that's the appropriate takeaway. You don't have to like their process. It appears they did interview three guys, the George Edwards, who was in-house, Joe Witt Jr., and then Dan Quinn. It feels hurried.
There was one more.
Simmons.
From
the Panthers, yeah.
Yeah, four is not one. It's not maybe the exhaustive search that we'd hope for, but that was the first thing I brought up today to start the show, and Brian was quick, you know, to say it's a weird situation. It's not like you're going in and you have all the time in the world. You have other teams who might be competing for these guys. So it might be sort of an excused rushing of the process, if you will. But I think the Cowboys are still one of the teams that philosophically we're waiting for them to go through the revolution, to have the light bulb come on and understand there's a different way of problem solving. And the guys who are a little bit younger and are looking at it more comprehensively instead of historically, as far as how do I get an edge, it's the ones that are researching every possible angle that appear to us to have the opportunity to set your team on a better trajectory. And I don't think the Cowboys really went through that. Quinn's still young enough, though, and has had so much success this decade that I feel like there's a really good chance they got this hire right. Maybe not the process was perfect, but heck, you know, sometimes just getting, you know, the right results, the most you can hope for. All right, winners and losers. Jared Goff's latest performance casting doubt on the quarterback's future with the Rams. You buying that? Selling that idea?
He won a playoff game. What are we talking to? He wasn't very good. Yeah, I think that's where they are, and I think that speaks to Sean. Like, the Rams are an organization that they empowered a guy that they think is really, really football bright, and then he went and found a guy that he thinks defensively is really, really football bright, and it's working out for him. Now, I'll say this, and this relates to Dan Quinn. You find me the best defenses in football, and I'm going to find you the best defensive players in football. The Rams are really good at defense. They have the best corner and maybe the best D-tackle to ever play. I'm not saying that about the corner, just the D-tackle. And that helps you a lot. That helps you out a whole lot. So if the Cowboys are going to have bad defensive players next year, I don't think that we're going to be like, man, Dan Quinn was great. Because you're going to be like, why are the Cowboys 24th in defense? Well, because they have bad football players still. But with the Rams, yeah, I think Goff's career is – Sean McVay is looking around like, is this my guy doing the Jerry Jones weekly thing? Is this the guy? Should I have my head on a swivel for the next guy?
Yeah, a couple things. I think, you know, for your point about Quinn and the players, absolutely. Marinelli and Richard has it at the 11th best scoring defense. Can you just get back to that? You know, I think that would be outstanding.
Yeah, how about just teach the guys the right way? How about just teach it? Now, if you've got players that are not capable of learning, then you need to reevaluate where you're at as far as your evaluation of those players. Like when we start to talk about football intelligence, you know, and we're drafting these guys, is that really, are we getting the best out of it? Is our model the right thing here? And if we've got players that are not capable of learning, then we need to do something different. We need to think. Yeah. You need to get – and I think that where a lot of what happened this year, especially early, was a lot of the teaching was lost. You know, when you are unable to teach, then the players lost confidence in you. But it might be on them, too, for not being smart enough to pick up what you're trying to do.
Well, this coaching staff has really let the team down. You know, you go back to 17, and there's Tyron out, and the Atlanta Falcons are having a field day, and Garrett's like, what, next man up? You kidding me? Oh, another sack? Well, the guy's going to have to get better and execute. And Nolan was like, well, I teach a hybrid. And the world was saying, we're in the middle of a pandemic. You might not want to change that much. These guys can't really do what you're asking them to do. And it took until players were running to the media complaining about it before he was like, oh, man, maybe that was a mistake to try to pull this off.
This is when you have a complete turnover on the – well, I shouldn't say complete because Leon Lett was still here. But if you'd had some holdover coaches, if you'd had a holdover coach on defense that he kept, he could have said, listen, are these guys capable of learning what we're about to teach them? Because a holdover coach – Kellen Moore, it didn't seem like anything offensively. They came out of the gate and they were strong, you know. Yeah. So they had an idea of the players they were working with. Defensively, I don't think they had an idea of the guys that they were working with, and I think that hurt them as they were preparing for the season.
All right, that's terrific analysis. You can tell there's plenty of meat on that bone, that Dan Quinn conversation. He is the Cowboys' new defensive coordinator. Winners and losers. Goff hasn't been right since the home stretch of 18. Completed just 9 passes in relief of Wolford Saturday. It's worth noting the Rams can save $12.5 million by trading him this offseason. That is loser number one for wild card weekend there, Jared Goff. It's tough. You know, he's playing through injury, so I don't know you can put too much into that. But that combined with how the rest of the season went and the idea that the Rams might be open-minded about their quarterback position, I'm with that.
Well, it's why you want the best and the brightest, because this is the same thing like with what happened to Russell Wilson the second half of this year. You want the best and the brightest coaching your team, because it's going to take the league about 6 to 8 games. Or, you know, if you're a rookie in the league, maybe it takes them longer. But whatever it is you do offensively, if you do the same things consistently, defense is going to figure it out. And so you need the best and the brightest. And I actually do think that McVay is one of them. And so if you're still not getting great quarterback play, yeah, you might want to start thinking about looking elsewhere.
Yeah.
How about you, Brian? You ready to move on from Jared Goff?
I'll tell you what, though. I mean, I wasn't a big fan of his to begin with. You know, and Jeff and I had some epic battles about that.
You protect the guy. He can play.
We had some epic battles about that. So I feel like, though, he's kind of going down the path I thought he was going to go. That's where this is going to be huge for him to go to Green Bay, because there are a lot of people feel like that he is going to poop in the bed when he gets up there and to play the Packers. You know, he's going toe-to-toe with one of the best, the MVP quarterback. And, you know, he's got to prove to people he could go win these games. Now, they got into a Super Bowl. What did they do? They didn't do anything. Now, McVay took a lot of heat for that. Like, oh, I tried to do too much. But, you know, there comes a point in time where you have to be that guy. And in this case, though, I think that the jury's still out on him.
All right, it is the G-Bag Nation here on 105 through the Fan. I'm surprised I can still see out of my left eyeball as mid-answer right there if you're watching on 105throughthefan.com. I took a drink of coffee, which I just made scalding.
Oh.
It jumped back through the little hole into my eyeball, into my left eyeball. Look at that little hole right there. Jumped right through there as I put the cup back down, create a little bit of a splash, shoots right through there into my left eye.
Is that the breathing hole or the drinking hole?
That's the drinking hole right there.
You managed to pop all the way out the drinking hole.
Came all the way back up top and into the eyeball there. I've had some close calls over the last 8 months broadcasting from home. That's the first time you had a bullseye, literally. Okay, winner, Tampa, winner from wild card weekend. Not only did the Bucs put up 31 against an elite defense, but they avoided a divisional round trip to Green Bay thanks to Seattle's upset loss to the Rams, a double victory for Tampa. The New Orleans Saints also had trouble with the Chicago Bears, so the Bucs have a real shot of making a run as a wild card team this January. And Brady looked so much crisper this postseason than he did last year at this time.
I'll tell you what, yeah, that hey, and tip of the cap to Tampa, because when Tom's uniform has grass stains on it, it's usually a bad day. But Tom's that the pewter jerseys or the pants and all that and whatever color, what are the colors, that rust? I don't know what the jersey color is. But, man, they did a great job of keeping him upright in that game. He didn't take any hits, didn't take any sacks. So, you know, that was the whole plan. They thought they could get after him, and they did a great job of holding up their end of it.
Yeah, congratulations to Tampa. No doubt they made the right decision moving on, bringing – a Tom down there. How important is a quarterback?
Very.
If old man Tom can go down there. I didn't think he had the ability to elevate a program like that. Pretty tough division.
I didn't think so either. because I didn't know if they would even be better than they were with Jameis, because at least Jameis was willing to push the ball down the field. So, you know, if I were ever going to be honest, I would apologize for calling Tom washed, because as old as he is, he's not. He does struggle if you can get to him, but that line does a great job protecting him. He's got great weapons, and the dude is absolutely dealing, and I hate it.
Yeah, you know, it's tough because you see these quarterbacks starting to lose the velocity on their fastball, and you know it's dangerous. You know they got to be nervous in some of those passes out there. But it's like with the spacing horizontally now that these modern schemes are bringing, the confusion, the misdirection, there's just enough of an opportunity that without that velocity you can get it done. You can't get it done once you've lost your balance and ability to look better than Roethlisberger, right? Roethlisberger's the other side of that, where you're like, okay, this is bad. But, you know, Tom's on that, Drew Brees on the other side, Phillip Rivers spending significant time on the side where it still looks serviceable. And it's incredible what the brain and the decision-making can do to compensate for the lack of athletic ability and lack of velocity. They're still hanging on as top 10 quarterbacks, I think, with Brady and Brees, and maybe top 15 or 20 with Rivers. And it's still enough because they're also avoiding the big mistake. Other winners and losers. How about Washington's Tyler Heinicke entering the offseason as an intriguing quarterback option, saying afterwards, I deserve to be in this league a little bit longer. 352 yards with two scores. I've been on the other side not playing, and it's not fun. Not as fun as this. Did he win himself a job?
Ooh, I doubt it. But, I mean, he impressed me. He played better than I thought he would. I think he played better than Alex Smith would have played. So I think Washington had their best chance to win the game with Taylor Heinicke out there. So, I mean, he's right that he deserves to be in the NFL and keep being in the NFL, but I don't think he went out there and Matt Flynn'd it. Like, does Taylor Heinicke think that being competitive and playing pretty solid football in one football game means that he's going to get a two-year, $50 million deal?
No, just be in the league, you know?
He'll be in the league. He'll be in the league.
He's better than Garrett Gilbert.
I don't think anybody's going to sign him and be like, guys, we're good at quarterback. We got Heinicke. Like, we're squared away. But he did. He surprised the hell out of me. He played competent football. He made that a good game.
Well, that shows you, too, though, the spring league, you know, and his – at least those quarterbacks, that's your argument right there. You know, like late in the year, here's a guy comes in, throws for a lot of yards, looks competent doing it. Well, where'd he get some experience? The XFLs, the spring – you know, there's something to be said. If the NFL could figure out how to develop quarterbacks without getting them killed in these spring leagues – you know, that's how you get these guys reps, where they look like competent guys.
All right, it is the G-Bag Nation's winners and losers here. We're working off a Bleacher Report article. Loser, you buying this? Seahawks OC Brian Schottenheimer goes from potential head coach to possibly being fired by the Seahawks within a week's time. Apparently,
well,
he's candidate with the Jets job.
I saw Pete say today that he's anticipating him coming back, and his answer was, we scored more points than we ever have. So, like, yeah, that's tough, though, in Seattle, because such a great start offensively to be followed up with how the second half of the season went and then how the playoff game went. I don't even know what people are going to be mad about him about in that game from Schottenheimer. You know, Russ has taken sacks. They're not protected. They just run the ball okay. I've seen some people saying they needed to throw it more, but throwing wasn't going well either. I don't know what you're mad about today at Brian Schottenheimer. Your team didn't play well. Your quarterback didn't play well. Nobody was making explosive plays. I don't know who to be mad at.
You're
maybe
up against
you know
a really
what?
Good defense.
Maybe what you would be mad at, because Pete Carroll did mention it, I think he used the word adjusting and adapting, that somehow over the course of the second half of the year with a quarterback that good, that you didn't figure out, what do people have a bead on us on?
Self-scouting stuff, yeah.
Yeah, and what can we do differently instead of thinking we're just going to keep cruising through this year, lighting everybody on fire? What are teams figuring out with us, and what do we need to do? So, you know, maybe that is on Schottenheimer.
All right, it is the G-Bag Nation here on 105.3 The Fan. It's a G-Bag Nation presents You Make the Call. We'll go back to Tennessee. Did Lamar make the right call by heading for the tunnel? Then Jeff's unnamed segment's coming up here at the top of the hour all next in the G-Bag Nation. Very regrettable dad moment. I still haven't recovered from it.
The school problem from yesterday?
Yeah. She just came in and was like, "Daddy, I still remember my classmates were talking to me about it today." Ooh. They're like, "Oh, what happened on Friday?" You know, hope I didn't traumatize her. You never want your kids to believe that you might let them down, you know, or that they can't count on you. And I just don't know how much I've violated that. But yeah, Friday at noon, we have the early pickup. And there I was sitting at the house about 12:15. School called.
Hey,
is there any reason you haven't? Yeah, those are the things that stick with you, you know. Those are traumatizing childhood memories right there. I suppose if that's the worst it gets to. But, you know, this is something that I don't know if I'm going to recover from for quite a while.
I mean, yeah, it's just abandonment and not being able to trust your loved ones. Surely right? That won't bother her in any way.
At least it's not as bad as last year around this time when she nearly drove her go-kart through the backyard fence and down a 10-yard drop-off. That might have been a little bit worse.
Physically.
Yeah.
Yeah, you should probably
she had a helmet on, right?
You start talking about therapy.
Yeah, she'd been fine. Yeah.
Even thinking about that one kind of shakes me to the core. Do you have any memories from raising Bennett where there was a close call?
Oh, yeah.
And it's like, oh, my goodness. I can't believe what almost happened.
I'll tell you what. One time he and I were in Dick's Sporting Goods together, and he was 6 years old, 5 years old, and he was standing next to me, and I was, like, looking at something. And next thing I know, he was gone, you know? I mean, literally gone. Like, I'm like, Bennett. And I'm like, you know, I'm thinking maybe he's around the corner with the batting helmets on or doing something. And literally he was like two areas over from me. And I mean, you talk about panic. And I mean, I was running through the store and I was like yelling his name. Yeah. And he just like, and I found him and he looked up at me like, what's the problem, Dad? And I'm like, son, you can't wander away like that. You can't do that, you know? And so, yeah, that was the one time. And then the other time when I took him to Six Flags and it was like 108 degrees and he almost died of heat exhaustion. Something like that.
Yeah, so you have a couple in your mind. Yeah.
Yeah, a couple of them that were pretty bad. Like, I had to buy him the bat wings. Like, they were these $35 bat wings. Like, when you pulled the front of them, they extended like Batman wings and stuff.
Okay.
Yeah, it was like one of those. I felt so sorry because he was just a sweaty little mess. And I looked at him, I'm like, son, what can I do to help you?
Yeah. Abby got old enough that she could swim.
Uh-huh.
And she could take care of herself all right. So about 5 years old, she's like, Daddy, I'm going in to take a bath. I'm like, cool, you're going to be sitting in 15 inches of water, no sweat.
Oh,
I'm sitting there watching the game. About 10 minutes into her bath, I go in to check in on her, see if she needs anything, towel, juice, whatever. She had a chair pulled right next to the bath and a space heater sitting on top of that chair.
No.
It tumps. If it would tump over, you know, it goes into the water, electrocution. And I'm like, oh, my goodness. So it was at that moment that I had a long, detailed explanation of what happens with electricity and water and why extension cords never, ever go into the bathroom. And while those plug-ins are, a legal amount of distance away from the bath. But that one still sticks with me big time. The go-kart and the bathtub. And maybe this one, you know, maybe this will be my most regrettable, even though there was no close calls. I feel like psychological trauma.
You just got to remember when she gets married, that just to show up. You know what I'm saying? Right. Don't like, oh, what am I doing? I'm hanging out in the back, you know, talking to people and stuff.
Make sure you're on time for that.
So make sure that's the one she'll remember. Yeah, that's the one she'll remember. Yeah.
Bitter rivalry on television yesterday, guys. And it is time for this NFL wildcard weekend. G-Bag Nation presents You Make the Call. Tennessee had won during the playoffs last year. They won during the regular season back in November when they danced on the Ravens logo at midfield. They won in Baltimore both games. Yesterday, end of the game, Marcus Peters, INT. The Ravens are dancing. Marcus Peters' celebration where he drops the football and does some sort of ballet move is incredibly entertaining. It's hilarious. And they were having a lot of fun at the Titans' expense. They were sparing no expense when it came to their celebration. And after the final horn, Lamar's off the field. He's down the tunnel already. Tannehill's out there kind of looking around like, well, I guess no hand to shake. I'm heading on in. Lamar's congratulating teammates as they're coming off the field. And at one point it looks like, oh, Lamar's going out there to maybe shake hands or he forgot about it, the excitement. Nope. He was just going out there to do a TV interview, and it was right on back the tunnel.
Mm-hmm.
Lamar saying later, listen, they disrespected us back in November. They got into it with our head coach. I am being the bigger guy. We are being the bigger guys by just walking off and not essentially responding to the disrespect. I'm not escalating it. What are you talking about? I am being But they've let us know they don't respect us. That was his message. So it's the G-Bag Nation presents You Make the Call. Did he handle that right yesterday?
Well, I'm really struggling with this one, Gavin, because this morning I did my overdue bias training, you know? And so I'm trying not to have any
unconscious bias.
I'm trying to really examine this because I murder Brady for this. Because Tom Brady, when he wins a game, shakes hands, and when he loses a game, he's a crybaby bee, and he doesn't. But since Lamar won and opted not to shake hands, I believe it's a different category. And I think because those two teams clearly really dislike each other, it's good for sports, and that just adds to the storyline. But my unconscious bias is I like Lamar. I pull for Lamar. So am I giving him a pass on being a bad sport? I don't know, but I'm giving him a pass.
I don't think so. If they had lost and he was in the wrong, you know, but it was clear that the Titans had started this and he won, so it's quite a bit different. Or if you lose and nothing really bad happened to you, you're just such a poor loser, you have to run off the field because you can't stand looking at the other guy, that's a protocol violation. But what you said in there as far as it being good for sport to have real rivalries, that's the thing that I think is most important here. It's good when guys don't like each other. It makes the handshake between the guys that actually do respect one another more meaningful. Yeah. So I have no problem with how Lamar handled that yesterday. Brian, you're the third member to chime in on this panel. What do you have to say, though?
Yeah, you know what? I kind of like I hate that when I saddle up the fence. Here we go. You know, I don't want to be that
good
guy.
Good place to be. Nice and comfy.
No, I don't want to be that guy. Because
coward.
I absolutely love the thing when you have the handshakes after a playoff game, you know, the series is over. I dig that. But I also, man, I love the 7-game bloodbath before that. And then the fact that you can skate up to a guy and shake his hand and pat him on the chest and, you know, keep going. But the NFL, I'll tell you what I hate more, guys. I hate all the pregame stuff. And now because of the COVID, they don't do it as much. They don't have the interaction. I got so sick of seeing guys hugging each other before the game. And I'm always like, man, they're trying to take us out of here, guys. What are we doing? Why, you know, if you want to hug up on somebody after the season and all that, call them up and do that. But man, before the game, it just used to drive me nuts. But I think that the NHL handshakes are the best. And I don't fault Jackson for running off. I really, really don't.
Yeah, before the game, if you got a good friend and you're not going to see him, you were in college together or something like that, I don't know, a head nod, a fist bump, there's stuff that's fine. But at the same time, even your good friends, if you're competing with them, I would imagine as you're building up to the start of that, it's, dude, I'm going to tear you up.
Yeah.
Don't even come across the
middle.
See,
that's what I'm saying. You know? I understand at the end of the game when you go up and you shake someone's hand, I get that. But that became, between those two teams, it became very personal. And both coaches allow it, too, because Vrabel's kind of that guy. Vrabel's a kind of a, you know what, the Rick with a P kind of a guy. Yeah, and so, you know, that's I could see why that the Ravens were upset with that whole thing that Tennessee was doing.
I think it might be an unhealthy relationship with competing, though. And I think that might really be a lot of it. Like, we are speaking on childhood trauma. It's like the example our dad set for how you handle winning and losing, how hard you compete, how rude you're willing to be. You know, I just think it's not that important. And you can compete 100% while also being friendly and respectful before and after the game, can't you? Like, I just think we want to win and we want to be better, and it's the comparative mind, and we can't handle losing. You know, I think
those
the professionals
two teams hate
that
each other, yeah, man. But they were showing Marcus Peters after the game, and he was kind of being pushed towards the tunnel. Like, he won.
Yeah.
And he wanted to go.
Yeah, he did.
He wanted to fight. Yeah, he wanted to fight somebody.
No, 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 no. They don't, you know, if you don't like each other.
Yeah.
That's cool.
But that's rare. And, like, this culture of being overly polite has prevailed. It's won. And I don't know what it is, but it's rare now that when you see teams that really don't like each other the way that was quite common during all of our times growing up.
I think the one thing is we focus, you know, everybody else could have a problem. I think the quarterbacks are the ones that are held to a different standard.
Yeah, as far as the handshakes and more the CEO.
Yeah.
the presidential type of approach. Okay, there you have it. Some more wild card commentary for you. We'll have the C-note coming up at 6:20. Jeff's unnamed segment of the day coming up next, and where are we going with that, sir?
Speaking of the wild card, cowards go home.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Want to put your baseball skills to the test? Then get ready to show your stuff with MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run. The official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Sign up for free for a chance to play your way to the Pitch, Hit, and Run finals at the 2024 World Series. Visit pitchhitrun.com today.